your body and mind totally relax into the totality of the experience that you're having without worrying about any of it. The sounds that you're hearing, or the process of the body relaxing, which you're experiencing, the thoughts that might be going through your mind, the feelings. Just simply let every aspect of your experience, then just simply let it be. Suggest that the entirety of your experience be allowed to relax, to be accepted simply as it is. With just a sense of objective interest and warmth on your part. Accommodating interest. Just suggest to yourself to completely let go, completely relax, even more deeply. Now, as you continue to relax, notice your own presence, the one who's abiding, silently present to all of the sensations and perceptions that you're having. You don't need to change the perceptions. You don't need to stop your mind. Just notice your own presence. The one who is present to all of these perceptions, the thoughts in the mind, sounds, physical sensations. See if you can notice that your own presence is not performing any function other than simply being. You can say awareful being, not aware of anything, just self-evident being, my own presence. All the perceptions are known. The plane overhead, the voices outside, the relaxation of the physical body, any thoughts, feelings. All are known. But yourself is simply the being. It is not performing an act of knowing. I simply am. Just let your mind enjoy being with your own presence. Just relax into your own being, the simplicity of being that you are. Notice your own nature, the wholeness of your being, the strength, the changelessness, the simplicity. The quiet, complete, whole bird on the tree of the body. Naturally, asangaha, unattached, pure and simple. Always the same. How is it that this simple presence that I am is called Ananda? That which is full and complete, whole, whose nature is Ananda, the beloved. See if you can understand why your being is Ananda, the quiet, simple being that you are. Is the most dear, what is most dear about it? It's me, because of whom all activities are engaged in. Because of me, all activities take place. I am the being, the person. The mind recognizes that I am stable. The being that I am is stable and whole. That I can't be hurt. I am always the same. The mind relaxes. It's found its home. It's found a self that is always there. Om Padram Karane Vishrinuyama Devaha Padram Pashe Makshabhir Yajatraha Stirai Rangai Istushtuvagum Sastanubihi Pyashema Devahitam Yadayuhu Swastina Indro Vrittashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Starksho Arishtamimihi Swastino Brahaspatir Patatu Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. A little bit more on verse 4 that we ended with last week, Pano Yesha. Pano Yesha Yasarva Bhutar Vibhati. Pano Yesha Yasarva Bhutar Vibhati. Vijanan Vidvan Pavate Nati Vadi. Vijanan Vidvan Pavate Nati Vadi. Atmakrida Atmaratihi Kriyavan. Atmakrida Atmaratihi Kriyavan. Esha Brahmavidam Varishtaha. Esha Brahmavidam Varishtaha. Sandhi. Pranaha. He. Eshaha. Yaha. Sarva Bhutaihi Vipati Vijanan Vidvan Bhavate Na Ativadi Atma Kridaha Atma Ratihi Kriyavan Eshaha Brahmavidan Varishtaha. This one, this Brahman, Eshaha, this Brahman, this Atma which is Brahman, the Self which is Brahman, limitless. This Self, this Brahman is Pranaha. This Ishvara, this Brahman is Pranaha. Pranaha means the vital force. So in Shankara says in his Bhasha, Pranasya Pranaha, Para Ishvaraha, the Supreme Lord, the Lord who is the Prana of the Prana, means the very life force of all of this creation. So Hiranyagarbha, when the creation is viewed as cyclical, where from Brahman, just the conscious being, which is my own being, which is my own self, from this being, this creation projects, is sustained, and resolves. When the creation projects, the subtle, the sattvic aspect of the creation is that which reflects intelligence. It's called Hiranyagarbha. It means the subtle. So it's not the subtle body of the creation, if we can say something like that. That which allows the entire creation to be known. That's what we call Ishvara. The entire creation is known. Kind of to make this clear is if you have a lucid dream or an imagination, the entire creation, the entire dream creation or imaginary creation is known. That means it reflects consciousness. Right? You may not be identified with any object in it, but the whole of it is known as one being. You could say, this is my imagination, this is my dream, I am the self of the whole. Right? Not identified with any given part, I am the self of the whole. That's what we mean, Hiranyagarbha. That aspect which allows for the entire creation to be known. Another way Swamiji has taken to talking about this is to look at the whole creation as a manifest, well, he'll call a manifestation of knowledge. And what he means by that in terms of your own individual experience is that right now you have so much knowledge that is really unmanifest. Right? But I can call upon something, some of your knowledge to manifest. Right now I could say, think of the driveway, or think of your front porch. Imagine your front porch. It's not imagination. It's bringing bringing to consciousness your knowledge, that knowledge of the front porch. Imagine an apple. Think of an apple. Think of a tree. Think of the ocean. Each time that you do that, there's a manifestation of knowledge, and that manifestation is by its very nature known. The manifestation of knowledge is not unknown. It by its nature is known. So say if I were, that's maybe a good way to think of it. If I go through saying a bunch of words like apple, pear, tree, you know, sunrise, each one of these words is going to bring about a manifestation of knowledge, and that manifestation is known. Now say for Ishwar, say if we say creation, creation means the whole infinite creation, the Srishti. There's a manifestation of knowledge. It's rather large in size, right? But of course, if I ask you to think of the solar system, what you know of it is going to be what comes in as a manifestation of knowledge. Right? Whatever the manifestation is, that manifestation is known. And so if we're looking at this infinite creation in that way as a manifestation of knowledge, then this creation is my being. From this, Ishwara would say, this is my being because I am the self of the whole. Right? However, if I'm within that creation, if I'm an object within that creation, now I'm going to be looking at the creation from the standpoint of a jiva within it. And from that standpoint, I can notice, you know, this creation, this is the physical form of this creation. This is a chair, this is a rug. I'm looking at the creation from the physical form, and I'm identified with an individual within it, having limited knowledge within it. So as a jiva, as an individual, I'm experiencing this creation. I'm experiencing the form of this creation within it. And we call this form that I'm experiencing through the waking state, through my sense organs, virat. This is the physical form of the Lord, right? We'll talk like that. But from the standpoint of the Lord, of Ishwara, really the entire creation is known and is my being. So from the standpoint of Ishwara, there's not the subtle body, Hiranyagarbha, and then another body, the physical body. But then that physical body is commented on and experienced from the standpoint of the jivas. Let me give you another example. If I have an imagination, I have an imagination. I am the self of that entire imagination. But from the standpoint of the ones within the imagination, the jivas within the imagination, they are experiencing my physical form. They're experiencing the earth, they're experiencing the town that they're living in, they're experiencing the streets, they're experiencing the inner relationship, they're experiencing my physical form. But from my experience, this physical form is not different or other than the manifestation of knowledge, which is the whole creation itself. See what I'm saying? If you have an imagination, the whole imagination is a manifestation of knowledge. The entire thing is in consciousness, right? But then from the individuals within it, they're experiencing the physical form. And then from the standpoint of that physical form, like you have a physical body, you will also notice the subtle, because you have a subtle mind, sense organs and all of that. So you'll make this division between physical and subtle. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, really, when the universe is manifest, the subtle and the physical are all part of one manifestation. But this manifestation where the entire thing enjoys consciousness, and I am really the conscious being of the whole, we call that Hiranyagarbha, the prana. I am the life force. I am the being. I am the self of the whole. So here when it says this, pranaha eshaha yaha, this Brahman, the Atma, this conscious being which is limitless, this Atma is the self of the whole. Right? It is the prana. It is the very life force, the one that is the very being, the very truth of the whole. And this whole is not separate from it. Just like if I have a knowledge, if I ask you to think of a tree, that tree, that manifestation of knowledge, is me. It's not separate from me. It has for its very being me. the manifestation, that capacity, that Maya capacity, is something that is not away from me. It's different from me only in the sense that the manifestation of knowledge comes and it goes into unmanifestation, it goes into unmanifest condition, it comes into manifest condition, and I, the self, the conscious being, don't go into manifest and unmanifest condition. Right? Consciousness, the simple being that I am, always remains the same. Right? Even though this Maya, this creative capacity, right, is not away from me, because there's no place else to put it, right? There's no place other than me. It's not away from me, it's other than me, because I am changeless. But I am its very self. This is the Satyam Mitya. You have to understand the Satyam is that which is myself, which is changeless. The Mitya is that which we experience as this creation, but has no separate being of its own, and yet it's not exactly me either, because the Mitya, only in this sense, the Mitya comes and goes. Right? I don't come and go. So I am itself, but it is not me. I am it, it's not me. Like that. You see how that works? Like, I am the clay of the pot, and the pot is totally dependent on me for its being. That's the Mitya. This pot form has no other self, no other being apart from the clay, nothing. It's totally, totally depends on me. I am it. Right? I am it. It has nothing else but me. But then I am free from it. Is this clay speaking? I'm not a pot. I'm clay. I'm free. Right? I'm not at all bound by any type of pot form. From me, from my standpoint, there's only clay. There isn't even a pot. I am what is here. And so now if you look in terms of your imagination, this imagination, this is you. It has no being apart from you. Right? It's a good way to say it. It has no being apart from you at all. But you haven't become it. You haven't lost yourself in the imagination and then have to scramble to get yourself back. Remaining exactly the same, asangaha, untouched, the imagination comes, is sustained, and resolves. That is the condition of this creation. The creation comes, is sustained, and resolves. So this Atma, this self, that the Jiva identifies to be me, the Jiva says, I am this Atma. It is this Atma, which in fact is Brahman. It is this me that is the very self from which this creation comes. It says, Eshaha Pranaha, that Brahman, is the prana. It is the very vital force, and it is that which sarva bhutaihi vibhati. It is that Brahman, this Atma, which shines as this whole, as all beings. It is this Atma that shines as all beings. With the Maya, right, this creation manifests into so many beings. Is there any being, is there anything in this creation that is in any way separate or away from me? No. I am the self, I am the truth of the whole thing. So all of this entire infinite creation is simply a manifestation of knowledge. It's a manifestation of me. It's not other than me. I shine in all of these different ways. Vibhati, bhati means to shine, to appear. Vibhati means to shine in all the different ways, variously. As how? Sarva bhutaihi, as all beings. I shine as all beings. You can say, I shine as the self of all beings. I also shine as all beings. Because, say if you say the clay says, I shine as the self of the pot. Actually, I'm the whole pot. Right? There's no pot away from me. So I'm the self of the whole. I am all of this. I'm the very being of all of this. I'm the self of all of this. I'm the truth of all of this. I'm the being of all of this. None of this has any substance away from me. So now he says, so that's the knowledge. That means I am the whole, right? This Atma, this me, the self, the silent, simple self that I am is the self of the whole. I'm the truth of the whole. That's the vision. Then it says, Vijanan, knowing that, present participle, Vijanan, the one knowing that, the Vidvan. The Vidvan is the one who has knowledge. So that Vidvan, who knows that this Atma, the Atma, which is Brahman, which I am, right, shines as all of this, is the very prana, is the very life force of all of this. The one who, knowing that one, then that vidvan, that jnani, bhavate, means bhavati, na ativadi. That jnani, the one who has knowledge, na ativadi, has nothing more to say. In other words, this ativadi, avadin is one who has a philosophy. Avadin is a philosophy, they have something to say. The jnani is not an ativadi. He's not able to come up, would not, could not come up with a philosophy that surpasses that, that goes beyond that. So ativadi, there's nothing more to say. There's nothing, another way to look at it, there is nothing more to be said. Because whatever you have to say, more to say, whatever more you have to say, that also is the Atma. There is nothing that is not Brahman. There is nothing that is not the Atma. So you can say whatever you want. You could come up with that, whatever philosophy you want, and the self of that, the being of it, the truth of that, is the Atma. Right? You could say, well, here's one tree, but this is a bigger tree. Just to get into objects. Here's a tree, but, you know, this is a bigger tree. And this is a bigger tree than that tree. And from the standpoint of the jnani, you say, yes, this is the Atma, and this is the Atma, and this is the Atma, and this is the Atma. And there is nothing but the Atma. So there's nothing more to be said after that. Once you see one without a second, right? One without a second means that this whole creation that you experience is only the self. It's only the self. What else are you going to add on to that? Anything that you add on to it, say that's all that is here is the self, anything that you add on takes you into duality. The instant you add something on to that, that which says there's only one self, that thing makes two. There's the self plus this. As soon as you add this plus this, right, you have now entered into mitya. You've entered into duality, right? As soon as you say plus this, now there's two. Once you're in duality, then there's nothing here to be found. Because the instant you're in duality, anything within duality is infinitely divisible. It has a beginning and end. It's subject to change. You can't find any substance here. And so for the jnani who sees all of this, that jnani has to be an ativadi. Ativadi means it has to be not an ativadi. The opposite of an ativadi, right? The ativadi who is one who can add something. The jnani can't add anything. If you add something, there's two. You're back into the mitya. And so it's very interesting, you know. This is an Upanishad, thousands of years ago. So this vidvan bhavate na ativadi cannot become an ativadi. Can't improve upon that. Right? You can't improve upon that vision. And that one, for that one, the jnani, the one who knows that I am the whole, that one is atmakridaha. That one is sporting. If you're playing, say you're playing tennis, or you have a relationship and you're engaging in activity with your partner or with your children, you're playing with them. For the ajnani, you're playing with your partner, you're playing with your children, you're playing with your friends. For the jnani, you're playing with yourself. Right? Atma, 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 Atma. There is nothing here. The subject and the object are the same. In this sense, let me put it like this. I am the self of the subject, and I am the self of the object. And I am everything in between. So I don't see, even though just in normal discussion, I am talking to you. But who you are is me. I am talking to you. I am engaging in conversation with you. But who you are is me. And so I am engaging in conversation with that which is not other than myself. And that That is known. So in spite, that is understood. So in spite of duality, there's non-duality. See? It's not that there's not duality, because here we are engaging in conversation. Here we are playing tennis. Here I am playing jacks with my niece. Whatever. Here we are engaged in kriya. Kriya means play, you know? But then, who am I playing with? Because I see all of this is myself alone. That's the idea. For the jnani is the one who sees all of this is myself alone. And so I'm only engaging in myself. Right? It's very interesting when you start thinking, recognizing that, especially when there's problems. When there's problems, you know, and there's friction and whatnot going on in the environment. There's friction going on in the environment. It makes it different when you see that this friction that is going on in the environment, either in a one's personal life or in the collective, that the whole thing is me. The whole thing is Ishvara. There's not any of it that's apart from Ishvara. There's not any of it that's apart from me. And so this is where, with this type of understanding, which is kind of natural for jnani, but as one starts to gain knowledge that karma yoga, buddhi that we're talking about in the Bhagavad Gita, starts coming in. You know, that karma yoga buddhi where all of my actions I take as, and all the results of my action I take as prasadam from the Lord. That's the karma yoga buddhi. Because at least there I'm recognizing that all of this is Ishvara. Right? But what about when I really recognize all of this is Ishvara and all of the sport that is going on is just a manifestation of knowledge. It's a manifestation of myself. So everything that I'm engaging in, I'm engaging in myself. That's the Atma Kridaha. Enjoying engaging in myself. Atma Ratihi means that the ananda, the pleasure that I get, that I'm enjoying, is the pleasure of my own being. Means that the affect, when I say I am whole, I am complete, where is my mind? Where is my mind taking that completeness to come from? Does it have to go out into the world, manipulate the situation, fulfill a desire, and then say, ah, I am happy because of you? Or does that mind enjoy the ananda of the self directly? Do you know, the thing is ratihi means that love, that priti, that ananda. The thing is, everyone is enjoying the ananda of the self directly. It's just the ajnani doesn't know that. There is no other source of ananda. It's not like, you know, for the ajnani, they have to squeeze their ananda out of the world. But the jnani just goes directly and gets it from the self. No. The ajnani also only gets ananda from the self. There is no other ananda. Right? The problem is that we think we get it. We think, we believe that we're getting it from the world. You believe because there's a grand scale illusion. The grand scale illusion means all beings are subject to the same illusion. And since we're all subject to the same illusion, it seems like a law, you know, that we need to fulfill our desires so that we can experience happiness. Because the fact is, when we fulfill a desire, we do experience happiness. So why shouldn't I think that I have to fulfill my desires to experience happiness? It's just that we don't understand the whole thing, what's actually happening. For all of us, when we fulfill a desire, at that moment my mind is desireless. When the mind is desireless, it's quiet. A quiet mind is not providing any type of obstacle. Right? And that quiet, relaxed mind reflects my being in such a way that it enjoys happiness. That's what's happening. Whether you had to fulfill a desire to have a quiet mind or whether you relaxed and you have a quiet mind, Whatever has caused you to have the quiet mind, that's what's allowing that mind to experience peace, to experience ananda. It has nothing at all to do with the object. It has to do with the relaxation of mind. And the jnani knows this completely. And so for the jnani, when the that knowledge is assimilated and you're no longer just thinking habitually, behaving habitually, when the mind has really owned that knowledge, then what do you think the mind does? It revels in the self. It relaxes in the self. It has no thought to go anywhere else to become happy. It's already happy, right? Relaxing in the self. Now that, and that's the reality for a jnani. And as a person, when a person comes to this knowledge, the mind is lifetimes of conditioning to make the world like this or like this or like this so I can be happy. Let me have this so I can be happy. Let me do this so I can be happy. I have to have you be like that so I can be happy. That whole, that everything in our consciousness and our mind is programmed in that way, right? And so it takes a while for the mind to really know, no, I don't need that either. No, not even that. Oh, well, what about that, though? Of course we do need that. Yeah. No. There comes a time when, after some assimilation has taken place, and it's very natural, it's very an organic growth on the part of the mind, assimilating your experience in the light of your knowledge, there does come a time when the mind just stays home. It stays home with your own being, for its, and revels, that's atmaruti. It's reveling just in your own self, and from that sthana place, experiences the world. Enjoys the world, the Atmakrita enjoys, Atmakrita plays with the world, enjoys the world, engages in the world. But the Atma, from that point of Atmaruti, means that the mind is no longer fooled into that sensation that I need this to be happy. Staying home, it experiences whatever the world has to offer. Staying home, it's not that you have to say, stay home. You don't tell yourself to... Oh, it's good. Swamiji's used this example. When you're in a situation where you're comfortable and all is well with you, it doesn't occur to change it. You don't think, oh, let me change this. You just stay there, right? Because all is well with you. Now, what if the mind has recognized that the sthana or the place, the being of that all is well with me, is changeless and the mind will never be away from it? In other words, your mind is never away from the self. And what if the mind has really recognized that it has discovered that all is well with me that I seek to get out of the world, get from the world, is my own being? Say it's really discovered that, and it's not, and these other little voices aren't coming in, yeah, but this too, and this too, and this too. No, it's had time to assimilate. It assimilates. It just stays there. Why shouldn't it stay there? Yourself doesn't move. Yourself never goes anywhere. Yourself doesn't come and go. It's not going to run away. The mind is never away from the self. So, in that sense, it's not even a matter of it staying there. Right? Because can the pot get away from the clay? Can the mind get away from the self? Not at all. And so it's not like, oh, I'm just going to stay home today. It is home. It is home. But we can talk like that because for the ajnani that hasn't differentiated or recognized that home, the self is projected out onto the world. And then you're out running after it, right? You're running after that peace. You're seeking that peace. And so you don't feel that you're home because yourself has been projected onto the world and you're running after it. See what I mean? So it's all illusory. That illusion, the ignorance has to be removed, so that illusion is removed. So your mind just stays home with the ananda that you are. You don't project it anymore. And so that mind feels secure, it's stable, because the Atma, the self, is secure and stable. Okay? So that's the Atma Ratihi. It just stays home. And staying home, it then plays in the world, right? Enjoying the world, whatever Bhagavan, whatever the Prarabdha brings. Now they have another word here, Atma Kriyadaha, Atma Ratihi, Kriyavan. That jnani, who knows, I am the whole, Kriyavan. Kriyavan means the one who has action. Kriya means activity, action. It's an interesting word. Swamiji does really a nice thing in his commentary with this. Doesn't say the jnani acts, it's the jnani has action. Because my being, in fact, isn't doing anything. So I'm never acting. And yet, I'm acting. The mitya. I'm engaged. Here I am engaged. We're talking, we're carrying on, we're cleaning our house, we do whatever we do. We are engaged in action, right? We have action. But am I acting? So I have to be able to see that, to recognize not moving, I move. Not hearing, I hear. Not speaking, I speak. Right? Not doing, I do. So that's the reality of it. The Atma, yourself, you're never doing anything. Right now, at this moment, your being is simply, very just simply, abiding as yourself, the me, your own presence. You're just abiding simply as yourself. You're not doing anything. You're just simply being, right? And simply being, you are doing all of this. Simply being, you're engaged in action. Why? Because the upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs, which is manifest as part of Ishwara right now, which is in this creation, you have sense organs, you have organs of action, you can grasp, you can walk, you can talk, you know? But the reality of this is such that this walking and talking and engaging, doing all of this, I'm not doing anything. Right? To understand it, think of it. It's not just understanding, it's actually seeing the truth of it. Like, for instance, when we did the meditation. When we're doing that meditation, do you recognize that as your thoughts are going on, as you have perceptions of the room, as you have perceptions of of your body, if you have all of these experiences are going on, they're known to you could say your mind is thinking, I'm thinking, you might say. Do you at the same time, do you recognize that you're not thinking? That you simply are being? Your presence, your quiet presence is there? Do you recognize that both things that's how it is? You can think if you recognize that you, have a dream, and you have a daydream, and you've taken on a character in the daydream. That character is acting and talking and doing all kinds of things, right? And that's true. It is, but you're not doing anything. So right now here, is your being, even in your experience at this moment, are you doing anything? You can say, well, I'm listening. I'm sitting here in this room. I can say I'm talking. But can you notice that? While you're listening, the listening is taking place. So you're doing something. Kriyavan, you're doing something. Listening is taking place. Can you also recognize the one who is just silently present? That's the Ishwara bird. Remember the Jiva bird and the Ishwara bird? The Ishwara bird is the one who's just abiding. I'm simply here. My being is simply here. And this being, the me that is simply here, is always simply here. And always simply here in exactly the same way. And there's never any variation. How boring. Why isn't it boring? It's not boring because the nature of your being is ananda. It's absolute wholeness and fullness. You're never boring to yourself. You know? So Swamiji used to even joke, just for an individual, if you take yourself to be this body, you're never bored with yourself if you are walking along, you know. He uses the example of if you're at the the San Francisco airport, if you go down that those long hallways or those walkways, on one whole side there's a mirror. Right? The whole side is a mirror, so as you're going down you always be glancing over. Glance over. Go in the bathroom, there's a mirror, you take a look. You know? You see one of those just a reflecting glass. Take a look. You know, always checking. Always seeing yourself. Why? Ananda. To start thinking about Ananda differently. You know, because sometimes Ananda, it's always thought of as bliss. You have to think about Ananda as differently. As that being which is most desirable. Maybe words like that. That presence which is most desirable. Even the word love is going to be problematic, I think, because love, we think of loving someone, something that's more active. But if you think of that which is the most loved or the most desirable, these are just words to help you understand what might be meant by Ananda. But to really understand what is meant by this word Ananda, you have to recognize your own being. And then you say, this is what they call Ananda. Why? Well, there's nothing more loved. There's nothing more beloved. There's nothing more secure. Nothing more whole. It is me. No, it is me. It is the one for whom all of this is. All of my experience is this me. And so, playing with this word Ananda, Atma Kreed, this Atma Ratihi, playing with this word Ananda, to try to recognize to understand that this presence that is here right now, this is the beloved, to identify that is makes a difference. It meant when the mind recognizes that your being is the Ananda, is the wholeness that in fact it seeks. When it recognizes that, seeking stops. Seeking fades away. Even the nature, these are just things for you to contemplate on. Even the nature of this Ananda, the me, this beloved presence of myself, even this in reference to a bliss experience. The bliss experience is nothing compared to this. Because what would you rather have? Would you rather have yourself or the bliss experience? I would definitely prefer that I was there. If I can have the bliss experience. But I come first. I always come first. And so they say, you'll hear in some of the Bhagavad Gita and all these texts, they'll talk about for the jnani, you know, whether it's they don't get excited over bliss and they don't get excited over the negative either. Well, it's true. You don't seek out bliss experiences or joyful experiences. It's not that there's anything wrong with them, but you don't need them. Because what the mind is full and complete with your own being. And the bliss experiences are secondary to that. Whereas for an ajnani, because the self hasn't been differentiated, that one that is the beloved hasn't been differentiated, all we think we have are these moments of joy or moments of happiness or actually mental modifications of different types of happiness and joy and peace and, you know, mental modifications that come and go as though that's as much as we get. You know, and that's why, you know, in the Thai Three of the Upanishad, it'll say, you know, all of these experiences compared to this, the Ananda of the Jnani, the Ananda of the Self, are nothing. All of these experiences of joy and bliss on all of different lokas, bliss here, the highest bliss here, and then in the higher, in the Gandharva loka, more bliss, in another loka, more, even more bliss. Mm. All of these levels of bliss, extreme blisses, extreme happy experiences, they are nothing in comparison to the simple, to my simple being, the ananda of my being. That's something to be recognized. It is not a statement at all, and it's not saying don't have bliss experiences. It's just saying that they're not necessary. They're not necessary to my being. And so if they're not necessary to my being, or to my wholeness, or to my fullness, or to my sense of completeness, if they're not necessary, or irrelevant in a sense, then when they come, they come, and when they're gone, as simple as that. Yeah. When they come, they're there. When they're not there, they're not there. As is true for all other experiences. Because the mind's wholeness is already taken care of. Because the mind is reveling in the Atma. So the wholeness and the well-being of the mind is taken care of. And as a whole and complete, I experience this peaceless, joyful experience. Whole and complete, I experience this problematic experience. Mm-hmm. Because all these experiences are there to be experienced. But the Atma is the constant. And that Atma experience, my own self experience, is what is always there. So now he says, it is this, this one who understands this, the Vidvan, who knows all of this, Brahma Vidam Varishtaha. It is that one who is the most exalted among all of those who know the Vedas. Here, Brahmavid means knower of the Vedas, where Brahma is the very tatpurya of the Vedas, but Brahma is also a word used for the Vedas as a synonym. So among all those who know the whole Vedas, all these people who know the Vedas, it's the one who knows this that knows Brahman, the one who knows Brahman amidst all of the knowers of the Vedas, who is Varishta, who is the most exalted, because they know the truth of the whole thing. And the Vedas, after all, right? The Vedas, the first part of the Vedas, the Karmakanda, give knowledge of what to do within the world, how to get to heaven worlds, how to have relative happiness in this world, how to follow Dharma, all of these things. Right? The first part of the Vedas deals with that. So to gain, well, really help you to gain relative happiness. It's the Vedanta, the Upanishads, the Jnanakanda, the last part of the Vedas, that deal with the nature of reality, the truth of the whole thing. So really, it's the one who knows the truth of all of the Vedas, right? The truth of the whole. It is that one that is Varishtaha, who really knows that I am the whole, right? That's the one who is most exalted. Shankara makes a point here to talk about Brahma Vidam. He's not saying that among the knowers of Brahman, this one is most exalted. As though there's different knowers of Brahman. Brahman is Brahman. Right? You know Brahman or you don't know Brahman. There are two different kinds of Brahmans. This one knows this Brahman and this one knows that Brahman. It's the one who knows Brahman like this is the most exalted. No. The one who knows Brahman is the one who, there's no ativadi here. There's no other way to know it. You either know I am the whole or you don't. So the one who knows Brahman is like the one who knows Brahman. There's not a better one or a worse one, right? Or a less one. It's not a more exalted one who knows Brahman, a less exalted one that knows Brahman. One who knows Brahman knows Brahman. So it's among those who know the Vedas, it is this one who knows I am the whole, which is what we call the tatparya, what the Vedas really have to say. In the end, this is the truth of it, right? It's the one who knows that is Varishtaha, the most beloved, the most exalted. Okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
I really like that idea of the the one who knows Brahman. I like the idea that comes along with that. That says there's an it's non-dual and it's equal. So the knower is equal to all. You know, there's no hierarchy or.
There's not a better knower of Brahman.
Yeah, that is so good.
Back to, you know, kind of knowing the presence that the thoughts are taking place in, and that, you know, or whatever. And the way you were talking about it, you know, I think in the meditation and then when you're talking too, just like there's that presence and then the thoughts are taking place. But it seems like there's no way to just know the presence except by inference, because as soon as I think, oh, there's the presence, then there's my I thought, you know, connecting, you know, just, and so there's my mind right there, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sometimes japa can be useful for that, just to slow the mind down a little bit. What you can notice there is, now, your mind is thinking. And then you've differentiated maybe your own presence, illumining that thinking. And then the I thought comes and says, oh, look, I'm illuminating what I'm thinking. But what you need to notice is that even when the I thought comes and is making a comment on the thinking, that also is illumined and nothing has happened to your being. Whether the ahankara, the I thought is there commenting, whether the buddhi is thinking, whether you're just relaxing and letting the thought flow, no matter what layer of thought is taking place, nothing is happening to you. And so, no thoughts can touch your presence that's illumining it, and nor hide it. So now the next time the ahankara comes in and says, oh, look at what's happening here, that's throwing your mind off, because, you know, your mind is then getting caught up with this ahankara has come, and so now the mind's thinking about that. Don't worry about it. Just notice that that's also known. And nothing is changing your being at all. It's exactly the same. Nothing's happened. So you just have to notice that. I would try that. Does that make sense?
Carol, I have a similar difficulty, I think, with trying to isolate and make that discrimination, because whenever, I mean, I think I get fixated on images, like there's like an image of space, or, you know, it's like I always end up encountering a quality.
Yeah.
And I feel like you've kind of like talked over and over again how it's like, it's not this, it's not that, it's not a thought, it's not a feeling, it's not, you know, and I feel like I kind of know what it's not, but it's like harder to know what it is.
Yeah. That's why the teaching methodology actually is so important. And sometimes in these meditations, I'm jumping over. I'm kind of just taking you there and not going through as kind of a step by step. But one thing to do, but first of all, that process, when you're just sitting, that process of relaxation is really good, because you want to get your body into a place where it's not beckoning for your attention. Okay, so in that way you can kind of get it out of the way, right? It's not beckoning for attention. And then you can watch your breathing. And now that's something that's being objectified. But one thing that I think that helps is that if you think of the, I'm going to take this inward a little bit, but if you think of the clay pot, the pot's experience, self-experience, is the clay, right? That's the truth of it. Its problem is that it takes itself, the pot takes the clay to belong to itself, and the pot is fragile, right? So if the pot breaks, it thinks the clay will die, that type of thing. But when it says, I am the clay, it's speaking the truth. So now one thing you can do is when you say, sitting with your relaxed body and mind, and you say, okay, I am the body. You say, I'm, that's what you think anyway, right? I am the body, okay? Or the body, this body is me. This body is me, okay? Now, what is good about this is it gets your mind to focus on what you really take to be yourself. Not just the form of the body, but I mean the being of the body, your sense of I. So when you say, okay, this body is me, what is the self-experience where this me lands? You're not trying to get rid of the body now. It's just the body is me, okay. It's like the pot saying I'm the clay. Where does that me land? Okay, so notice that. Now, notice this body is breathing. Okay? Now you can notice this me, that is the body, started there, this me. Then notice this me in reference to the breathing. And you may be able to see that the me is not breathing. The breath is coming and going, but the self isn't. Right? So you can maybe notice that. Then hold on to this sense, this me, the sense of me that is the body. And now look at it in reference to your mind. The mind is thinking, right? Is the me thinking? And what you'll notice is that the mind is going on thinking, thought after thought after thought, but I am present to that thinking, right? And so what is good about trying to do it this way is that it gets you to who you really take yourself to be. And that's correct. It's just knowledge is so, the idea of enlightenment and getting knowledge is so highfalutin in a way that it takes me away from this very simple, real sense of self that I have when I say, I am the body. You say, I am the body. I'm not talking about just the form, just your own presence, the me that's indwelling this body. Now what we want to do is recognize that the me that is indwelling this body is actually Brahman. And how to recognize that? Well, slowly recognize that, okay, here I am, and this body is actually something I'm aware of. Here I am, the breath is something I'm aware of. Here I am, the thoughts in the mind go on changing. Here I am, can I change me? Can I objectify me? No. Can I change me? Am I ever not here? So that's how you have to play with it. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, for a long time when I was doing Dipdisha Vivek, it was really helpful for me. Well, when I had this understanding at one point that, you know, it was all these objects, object, object, object.
Yeah.
And then I was looking for the me.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized I was looking for the me as if it was
an object.
And then, you know, then I think you have to kind of realize that you're already present. So, you know, it's not like another object.
That's right. That's nice.
I guess I had this experience of being skeptical where, that's an object. You know, to go, it's an object.
But, you know, if it is an object, you can get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Any object, anything that can be objectified, you can turn your back on it. You can't do that with your own being because you are always there. Right? And that's also nice because you realize that there's nothing I can do about myself. I'm the constant that I can't put a bag over me. I can't not be present to whatever the experience.
Also, you can't screw up then.
If you can't screw up, you can't lose yourself. Once you know, you are there amidst whatever the mind is doing. Whatever confusion is going on. Whatever is going on in the body, you're the one that is, you're the constant presence. And that you is what you take to be you right now. It's just that the problem is that what you that the you that you're taking to be you, you're convinced that it's that is the body and that there's some other you to discover. We have to discover that this you that you're certain is the body is Brahman. It is this you that we're talking about. That is the most personal, very being that you are. That can't be shaken in any way. You can't get away from it. You can't change it. It's present to no matter what the thought is, what the feeling is, whether it's a happy thought or a sad thought, what the perceptions are. It doesn't make any difference. There is a sense of surprise, I think, in discovering it, because you say, because at least for me, there was such a surprise because I couldn't believe that it was really me they were talking about, the me that I took to be myself, you know, that I'd mistaken, I'd taken myself to be this body and mind and sense organs, but that it is this me actually that is me that is Brahman. Sounds convoluted maybe, but that's kind of how it was.
No, it's understandable.
I think that's why it really rings true when you said about looking in the mirror, you know, and what is it about? And then, and I was looking at myself in the mirror the other day and I was thinking, why am I looking at myself in the mirror? And it is something, it's weird, because I don't think it's just vanity that draws one to that. There's something.
It's yourself.
Yeah.
It's the self, yeah. Mm. Which is the most dear.
Yes.
It is the most dear. And so, I think that's, for me, that was a really beautiful contemplation we used to do, Swamiji used to do. That which is the most dear, if those words work for you. Because it is true, there's nothing more loved than your being. And so to center in on that fact. Yeah.
Yeah, the word, the simplicity of the silent present, the word simplicity, I really, you know, each time I hear you talk like that, I get it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very simple, you know? And it can be very complicated too, of course, if you're looking for it. But if it reveals itself as it is, it's utterly simple.
Utterly.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, but you see, then I feel like, oh God, I wonder if it's going to go away if I turn, if I think a thought or I turn this way. You know? And then I'm like, well, remember Ross did that once.
Like, yeah.
Turn around and see if it goes away. And it didn't go away.
Yeah.
But there's a fear of intimacy almost, you know? When you say the beloved, the most intimate me, I'm very attracted to it, but I'm also very, I think maybe that's that part again of like me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
maybe
I do.
That is.
Yeah. Well, you can play with that and see.
Yeah, thank
yeah.
you. It's very beautiful. Thanks.
You know, you mentioned this thing about, the line about reveling in the self, playing in the self.
Yeah.
And how it's very interesting if you're like in friction or something to look at it from that point of view. So that to me, you know, is really challenging because, you know, even if one has some sense of the self and Ananda, some sense of that, so when one gets into conflict, I mean, for myself, it becomes, sometimes it's like I can see it's a game in a certain way that doesn't really matter. But still, it's very hard. And yet it becomes a game that becomes deadly serious. You know, like I have to win. you know what I mean? And so then to see it as all Brahman.
Yeah. Or as Ishwara.
Or as Ishwara, mm-hmm. Right.
Say even if you're totally caught in it,
mm-hmm.
but you bring that drishti, you bring that understanding, even while you're still caught in it,
mm-hmm.
it can give you a little space. You know, it can give you a little space. But I think that as your mind starts settling into your... as the mind starts settling into your knowledge, to the point where the mind can say, I am the self. What it means is that the self, that the mind is just not removed from the self that you are. Truly, truly you are, you know. So that stability is there. Then all of this riffraff that goes on, the mind isn't engaged in it. The mind is with the self. And until that happens, there's that karma yoga, you know, which is so helpful. Karma yoga gives the mind the tools that it needs to be in a healing environment for it to mature. And you have to give the mind time to mature. You can't ask a mind that's spent literally lifetimes in samsara and ignorance to just totally change overnight. It slowly changes, it unflowers, it unwinds in the light of your knowledge. But once you understand how to be with the mind as it's unwinding, you know, because once you have enough knowledge, enough clarity to then let the mind unflower, let the mind grow, then it's a very, very pleasant journey, right? Because there's a compassionate mind, a compassionate buddhi that has knowledge that allows the mind to kind of work through all of the things it has to work through. So then at that point, life becomes nice, even if the mind is still growing and, you know. And then the mind just unfolds itself, it unwinds itself. You know, so that the mind, in the end, the mind's, the way the mind is true to the way the creation is. There's not, the jiva's mind is not at odds with Ishwara. That's...
Yeah, because it's interesting, I talked about, then you can be engaged in the world, because otherwise the temptation is either you feel like, either, you know, I want it my way, or else I don't want to, I'm not going to play this game. You know?
Yeah.
I'll take my toys and go home or something
like
that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So that
yeah, that's true. You recognize there's a lot more players in the field. Ishwara, you know? There's a bigger player. A bigger player that you're of which you're a part. You know? When you have kind of some bhakti or enjoy Ishwara, this limited upadi is part of a limitless upadi. This limited knowledge is part of limitless knowledge. You know, a limited upadi can't know. You can know what you think you want or what you think is best, but you can't know in any other way than a limited way, you know. Whereas from the standpoint of the whole, if you're thinking of it in terms of Ishwara, then the whole knows what is best. So I get a lot of pleasure, actually, out of looking at the creation in that way, seeing how Ishwara is working this out, how things work out. You know, the way in which things work out, and understand the intelligence of it. You know, where you're not the center. You're not the center of it as a jiva. The whole is the center. You see what I mean? You see how the whole thing is working out. and the intelligence involved in the whole.
If you're sort of stabilized in yourself, in that sort of unchanging self, and then, I mean, then the nitya must not really seem that serious in a way, you know? I mean, it seems
it's not that serious in terms of yourself being at stake.
Yeah.
So the seriousness is an objective seriousness.
It's what?
An objective seriousness.
Uh-huh.
The seriousness isn't the seriousness of yourself being at stake. So the seriousness has to do with if there's something serious going on in the situation that you're responding to. Or it's all relative within mitya. Because it doesn't negate seriousness within mitya, but it's just that your being isn't at stake. No being is at stake. Not that Ishwara is not at stake.
Right. But what I was wondering is if there's a sort of almost like hierarchy in a way. It's sort of, I mean, it's like yourself is yourself. All this maybe is yourself. But it's mitya, and so yourself is the beloved, so then the mitya is...
Well, the mitya is Ishwara. Remember, everything enjoys the same order of reality, like there's, in this sense, within Ishwara, there's Ishwara, and there's the jivas that are part of Ishwara, and that all enjoys the same order of reality.
Right.
So that's important also not to confuse or jump levels.
What are you trying to say?
I don't think I'm up.
I don't think you were either. I was just commenting on it.
I guess I just was thinking, like, sort of lately I've been thinking a lot about, like, myself as the whole, or myself, you know, or trying to recognize that. And then just sort of thinking, like, how all my life I take everything, have taken everything so seriously. All events, and, you know, because it all, apparently, I used to, you know, it all affected me. And then I thought, well, I guess in some ways, it's a real sort of, is it, would the word be paradigm shift or something, or like a different shift? Because then you see what doesn't really affect you, you know, in that same way that you thought it did. So
that's true. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can respond objectively to the seriousness of a situation, but that doesn't mean that your mind and your being has become affected.
Mm-hmm.
And so, out of the wholeness of your being, you still respond in the situation, but that doesn't mean that you've become sad. It's not possible to become sad. The reason for that is it's not that the mind can have different thought modifications, but yourself is yourself. It doesn't become anything. It just is what it is. It stays as it is. So I don't see how it's possible to become sad. Even if I have a thought, even if I had a sad thought, I don't see how I could feel sad, because myself isn't that. I'm not that. See what I'm saying? And so, even for the mind to build up on a type of sadness, I don't see how that's possible, because it's not who you are. And you are who you are isn't subject to becoming that. I don't know, it's all... I don't know if this is helpful to talk like this or not. Maybe. All right.
Another Sunday evening.
And the cozy fire of knowledge.
The cozy fire of knowledge. I like that.